It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The morning after the spring general election and the record-shattering Supreme Court race, we make space for your reaction to the results. Judge Jana Protasiewicz prevailing over former Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly. Your questions, they're front and center about the future of Wisconsin politics. The number to talk, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lily Gorin is here, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me on this morning, Kate. It's great to be here.
Well, it felt like the whole nation was watching to see how the Supreme Court race would turn out. What is your reaction to Protasiewicz's victory here?
Well, I mean, I was surprised by actually how big the spread is. Wisconsin voters turned out in record numbers for an off-year election in a strange time of the year. And in Wisconsin, I also have been telling people we vote a lot. We vote frequently, which also can lead to people being less engaged. But that was certainly not the case in this particular race. And so a 10-point spread in Wisconsin is huge in large measure because we are a fairly, sort of tightly balanced state. And so when I saw, the race called a lot earlier than I expected, and also in continuing to refresh my numbers, that 10-point spread remained in place more or less. Those were surprising results to me.
Well, political scientists keep an eye on the wow counties. The Waukesha, Outagamie, Washington is kind of that diagnostic tool on our shade of purple, if you will. Is there anything notable out of wow from last night? Because Kelly seemed to have quite a hold on those counties.
Yeah, and again, I think that they were a little bit closer than expected. And obviously, I know perhaps a little bit more about Waukesha and pay a little bit more attention in Waukesha County than the O and the W and the other W.
Yeah.
Not to diss them, because I'm not. but that, I do think that the race was not as sort of lopsided in Kelly's favor in the Wow counties this time around.
Well, with Protasiewicz winning, what does that mean for how the court could handle key issues?
It is a court made up of, not just Janet Protasiewicz. She will be joining six other jurors, I believe, on the court. And so there are cases that, have been sort of sitting, waiting for this race to transpire, before there were moves to sort of move forward on them. And of course, this particularly involves the 1800 law with regard to abortion rights in Wisconsin. So I have a feeling that case will likely move forward to the courts and end up probably in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court at some point, as well as some questions about the electoral maps in Wisconsin. I have a feeling that at least those two cases are likely to move in front of the court this term once she is sworn in, which doesn't happen for a number of months now.
Right, because she serves a 10-year term starting in August, and that makes me wonder, what happens in the meantime on the court? What is this transition period like?
Well, I mean, I think as far as I understand it, the court continues to operate and as it will, but that some cases will, sort of be held back until she moves onto the court, and the process sort of will involve her as one of the deciding jurors, as opposed to wait to moving forward before she's on the court.
Talking about the results of the spring election with Carroll University political science professor Lily Gorin, you can join in with your reaction, what you saw at the polls, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Steve in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi. What's on your mind the morning after?
Yeah, I just want to know what the guests' feelings are about the media and how they handled the allegations of Janet abusing her husband, as well as being a racist, where even NPR would not allow guests to ask questions of Janet when she was on, but now after the election is obviously perfectly fine with the questions being asked. Curious what the guests' thoughts are.
Steve, thank you. Lily, go ahead.
I do not know about the allegations that Steve is talking about, which may go to his point with regard to the media. But I don't really have more to say about that, not knowing many details about this, what he is talking about.
I want to turn to the 2024 presidential election. How critical is this ideological shift in the run-up to 2024, and what comes after? How could that affect the presidential election?
Well, I think that this was one of the reasons also why there was a lot of national attention on this particular Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. Given that Wisconsin has been a very closely contested state in the presidential elections for a long time now, it's not just in the last couple of cycles, but, you know, it was sort of very contested in a so-called purple state, that there were some issues with regard to the Supreme Court certifying the electors and certifying the election according to the outcome in 2020. And there was a lot of concern with regard to what the court's makeup would be in 2024 if there is another, you know, very closely contested election, which I assume there will be, and the role of the court in terms of certifying the election as it reflects the outcome of the voters. And so I think that that was something that was really drawing a lot of attention from national media and the parties. And this was, of course, I believe the most expensive state Senate race in history. And I think part of it was around that particular issue.
Can we spend a moment there on the most expensive judicial race in history? What does this money that's poured in, the race was flooded with outside money into a single justice on the high court. What does that say about the integrity of the court and the expectations on the court?
Well, I mean, it also goes to highlight the fact that while the judicial races are said to be nonpartisan, that the courts themselves are, in fact, you know, partisan participants in the political system, particularly the case when you do have elections. You know, people are voting for a justice, and in this case, certainly voting for a justice that reflects their particular political perspectives or political perspectives that they are supporting. And so I think that that's a lot of what we're looking at, is the fact that the courts, while we would like them to sort of be in our imaginary space, nonpartisan, and, you know, you put on the robe and you become, you know, somebody who doesn't have any opinions. The fact is that justices have opinions, and they often come through, not just in the Wisconsin courts, but, you know, across the nation on the Supreme Court and so forth.
Lily Gorin, political science and global studies professor at Carroll University in Waukesha, unpacking spring general election. And you can call in with your questions, your reaction to the election, what you observed at your polling place. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The morning after the spring general election, getting your reaction, your takeaways on results, what has transpired. Be part of the conversation by calling in with your questions or thoughts at any point, 800-642-1234. Political science and global studies professor at Carroll University, Lily Gorin, is here. Let's bring in a caller, Lisa in Madison. Lisa, I understand you worked the polls.
Yeah, I did. Just as with the midterms, I was assigned to a campus voting site. And just as with the midterms, the kids showed up in overwhelming numbers. I think the site that I was at this time, there were roughly 1,450 eligible voters that could have come in. We closed at 1,013. They're averaging better than the state, and that was similar across all of the campus sites that we kind of heard from. And, you know, I would just add that in 2022, there was a lot of talk that the kids just came in to vote because they were hoping for student loan relief. And clearly that wasn't on the issue this time. And these Gen Z kids are aware and they're active and they're voting and they're speaking out. And I was really proud that they all showed up like that.
Lisa, thank you so much for that firsthand glimpse there. Lily Gorin, aware, active, and showed up.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I have students that I was working with yesterday, and I had one student, one of my classes, who asked me if he could leave early so he could run back home to vote. And so a lot of my students were also quite energized. I also had students who were working on both campaigns, both Supreme Court campaigns. And so they were also engaged and, you know, doing door knocking and also, you know, working with the campaigns and going to some of the parties, if you will, in the evening. And so I think the caller is correct in terms of the Gen Z voters are engaged and they are turning out. And I do think that for a number of people, issues around reproductive rights may have been something that was a motivating factor, and a variety of other topics that were discussed throughout the campaign.
I want to turn to Wisconsin Senate District 8 here, where we had Republican State Representative Dan Knodel and Democratic Attorney Jody Habesh-Sinikin. Knodel's made that victory speech at last check. Habesh-Sinikin was waiting for all results to come in. But what do you make of this? Perhaps now we've got a supermajority, although AP hasn't called the race, Knodel victory, if it would give the Republicans the 22nd vote they need to have a supermajority in the Senate. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, it allows for the legislature to essentially potentially subsume the governor in a lot of ways. And this is one of the issues that the Democrats in the state have, you know, been pushing and campaigning against. I had been following this race quite closely as well. And I think the vote differential at this point is about 1,000 votes, possibly. So I don't know if that will require a recount or not to get the final results. But I think it does mean that the Republicans in the Senate and the Assembly will be able to sort of move forward on legislation that they would like to see implemented.
This district, north of Milwaukee, was previously held by a Republican. Alberta Darling vacated. Does the result say anything about the direction of this region's politics?
Well, I mean, again, this is a sort of a county that is, or excuse me, a district that has been drawn to, you know, sort of be even a little bit safer Republican district than it had been in the past. And so I think that the issue around sort of drawing safer districts is one that we've already talked about in terms of the electoral map that may come before the Supreme Court. I also understand that Knodel has discussed already potentially moving to try to impeach Justice Protasiewicz. So that is another dimension of having a supermajority in the Senate that we may see come into play.
I think his words were he would, quote, certainly consider supporting impeachment proceedings against Protasiewicz. What would that step mean?
You know, again, at this point, we haven't seen a lot of impeachment moves recently with regard to justices. Obviously, this is something that can also be done at the national level in terms of the sort of means of removing lifetime appointment justices. But again, we have it in the capacity of our Constitution that, you know, you can impeach justices, but usually there has to be reason, and there also has to be agreement to move forward with that. So remains to be seen exactly how and when that will unfold.
Carroll University political science professor Lily Gorin, our guide to the spring election, and your takeaways, 800-642-1234. Mark in Madison now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Good question for the guest. I was curious whether, in her opinion, ranked choice voting with an instant runoff and, you know, final five or final four candidates might help to reduce partisanship in these spring elections and give voters more choices at the polls.
Thank you, Mark. Lily?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the idea behind ranked choice voting, and I have studied this a bit, and it does exist in a number of places already. I think Maine has it now, and a couple of other cities have it, that this does potentially provide for more candidates and also a potentially different dynamic in the campaign itself, because you don't want to have people alienated by you so that they will in fact rank you, if not first, then second, third, or fourth. And so that is one of the assets with regard to the idea of ranked choice voting, is that it does provide for, you know, voters to not necessarily be in a binary situation. And then the candidates have to sort of try to appeal to more voters, moving them beyond sort of a base of voters.
Something to watch there. Mark, thank you for that. I want to move on to these statewide ballot proposals that passed overwhelmingly. Can you talk about these initiatives and what they address, what you saw there in terms of their, you know, overwhelming passage?
Well, again, it seemed that, you know, Wisconsinites came out and they are in support of having judges have more capacity to sort of keep accused individuals in jail, not giving them bail or giving them very high bail if they are concerned that releasing this person on bail would be potentially dangerous to the public, so that the justices involved or the judges involved would have the capacity to do that. And there is also the issue around the non-binding decision or the non-binding sort of outcome, again, in the case of Wisconsinites voting on having able-bodied individuals be able to or required. Be required to search for work if they are receiving welfare from the state. But that is not that is, you know, sort of something that the legislature could now take up and have the voice of the Wisconsin populace behind them.
Leading up to the race, there was speculation on how these ballot measures were as a way to boost voter turnout for Republicans. Do you think they made a difference being on the ballot?
Well, I mean, they may have made a difference being on the ballot, but I also had heard from any number of people and the way that they were constructed in terms of how you were to vote on them was really confusing to voters.
The language and how it's drafted. Yeah. Can you go into that?
Well, I mean, this is where you have to sort of figure out if you want to vote no or yes on something. And it's kind of a double negative sort of situation. And I was getting texts from friends and colleagues who were saying that people where they were voting were just befuddled by what they were supposed to be voting for in the ballot initiatives. And this is one of the difficulties with regard to these kinds of initiatives. If they are not clear, then it is more difficult for voters to sort out, you know, which way they really want to vote. And so sometimes this is in fact used for that very reason.
we only have a couple seconds left. How does it feel to be a political scientist in this epicenter, in this environment in Wisconsin?
It can be a little bit trying sometimes, but being a political scientist in the last couple of years, particularly studying American politics, has been a little bit of a different experience than when I first started out.
such kind words. They're a little different. But
let's say that there are some administrations that take more energy.
Energy. Lily, thank you for joining us. Out of time here. Lily Corin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.